All right, James Oxendon. My levels look good. Let's get you.
Mic check, mic check. 1, 2, mic check.
Looking good, my friend. So we're going to do this as we do all Sidewalk Radio interviews.
Okay.
A friendly chat.
Very good.
I know you're good. I know you're good for that.
Definitely.
Let's start off, though, just kind of quickly letting people know who you are and what you're all about, and then we'll just get into our focus.
Okay.
Who are you?
James Oxendine. I've been in Atlanta for, I guess, several decades, and I guess the best way to characterize what I've been doing professionally and personally, basically I've been an urban guru. I've been working in the private, public, not-for-profit sector throughout most of my professional career here on a local, statewide, and national basis. And my professional career is basically described as my love for cities.
Yeah, that's perfect. And it's a great, great foundation to base this conversation on, which is, you and I have been friends for years now. I always love hanging out with you. We usually do what you call a chat and chomp. And it's cool, you know. So I thought we'd do that in the studio. And basically, Sidewalk Radio for the last almost 3 years has been about the history of Atlanta, the cultural and physical development of Atlanta. But I haven't yet to do a show that speaks specifically to kind of a then and now. And being, you know, a guru, being someone that's been around Atlanta, being a writer, being someone that's got his eyes open and paying attention, I couldn't think of anyone better to talk to than you about that. So I'd like to do it through your own personal experiences, though. So, like, tell me kind of your Atlanta history, and then let's go from there.
Well, my history here in Atlanta, as I said earlier, stretches back a few decades. I came to Atlanta from Washington, D.C., where I attended graduate school. And I was lured to Atlanta by a series of experiences I had in the summer of 1972, where I just had a great time after an impromptu visit. Atlanta presented some things to me in terms of its atmosphere, the people, and a general sense of going someplace quickly and with great purpose and dispatch. And that grabbed me. So as soon as I could, I made my way back.
What was the visit all about?
It was just to visit some friends who I'd gone to college with, and it turned out to be a very romantic summer. I met a young lady who captivated my attention.
So love led you to Atlanta.
Well, yes. Looking back, they said love makes you do foolish things. I guess I have to co-sign on that.
July 3rd will be my 18-year anniversary of moving to Atlanta. Mine was not quite as romantic, my Atlanta genesis, but it did involve a Guns N' Roses concert and a Braves game.
Okay.
Hey, whatever works, man.
Exactly.
We're both here.
Yes.
So
yes.
What was Atlanta like when you planted the roots?
Well, I think the early 70s of Atlanta, as I recall, and I moved here in the late 70s permanently, was a town of promise. I had never seen some of the architecture, some of the street enthusiasm that I saw. For instance, in Midtown, they had a gentleman called Birdman who rode up and down Peachtree on a bicycle, especially in the 10th Street area, flapping his hands. But his day job was to distribute the predecessor to Creative Loafing, the Speckled Bird.
Oh, I remember. They had great graphics.
And that, I guess, characterized the sort of come-see, come-saw atmosphere that I think characterized Atlanta in those days. And it slowly morphed into a city with a purpose, a city on the move. I think that was during the days when they coined the phrase, a city too busy to hate.
And this is really around the time when Portman was kind of rocking and rolling. Colony Square would have just been coming up in Midtown. Were you paying attention during those days to architecture, or was it just following the love life?
Well, no, it was a combination, because by that time I had moved on, and soon afterwards had a family, so I had to go out and earn my daily bread. But I met a lot of people involved in jazz, and that was my first exposure to Colony Square, because the Atlanta Jazz Society used to meet there. And in those days, the Colony Square was also the site of Atlanta's Fairmont Hotel, which was just a very upscale, over-the-top, opulent-type hotel. In addition, Colony Square had a skating rink and a number of very, very excellent restaurants. So it was a true mixed-use development, one of the first in the country.
Was that where Pleasant Peasant was?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, because people don't realize.
Well, I take that back. It was Country Place.
Oh, Country Place.
Pleasant Place, the Pleasant Peasant, was in Phipps Plaza.
Okay, so Country Place, because I only got to go there once. But what people, like, right now, we're a couple of years into a food revolution here in Atlanta. But back in the, and you write a lot about food for Atlanta Magazine and others. Back in the day, I mean, there were not a whole lot of options. But what was here really kind of started it all.
That's one of the many untold tales of Atlanta, that many trends that became national in scope got their start here. The peasant group with their peasants restaurants, a very simple bistronomic type spots, became very popular not only here, but in Washington, Philadelphia, Minneapolis. And that trend with the little waiters wearing very casual clothes, the chalkboard menus, those things that became more or less tour de forces in other markets sort of originated and became very popular here. And I would look at the rise of restaurants in Atlanta sort of parallel as tracking Atlanta's growth as a city. As the sophistication of restaurants and their patrons grew, so grew the city.
Were those original, and these restaurants, I know Bob Amick, Steve Nygren, Pano, I believe.
Well, Dan Daly were the three partners.
Okay. And, I mean, but Pano, aside from that.
Yes.
But those were kind of the guys that started that movement, right?
Well, Pano was on a different plane. He, after immigrating here from Savannah, brought what is popularly known as fine dining Buckhead style to Atlanta with Pano and Paul's in the early 70s. But in addition, there were a couple of very, very good spots in that time. Hedro Heights Inn, that is now Aria. There was the Clock and Five downtown, 1776 in South Buckhead. Fleur de Lis in Buckhead. Most of dining and commercial activity and real estate centered around downtown Five Points in those days. But there were neighborhood spots even then that were beginning to generate a buzz.
So chicken and egg with dining and Atlanta growing up. I mean, did Atlanta growing up from the convention business really help popularize these restaurants in this movement, or did like a more cosmopolitan city help the convention, or did they just go hand in hand, or what?
I think it was hand in hand, but it was in fits and starts. When Portman first proposed expanding Atlanta's convention business, he met with opposition. The battle in those days was between a site that Portman wanted, where the current Civic Center is, and where the current World Congress Center is now, which developer Tom Cousins, who developed the Omni, which was truly a fantastic development in those days. It was the second mixed use in Atlanta. And people think that Atlanta is not a city with a great fashion sense. But in those days, we had Nina Ricci and Pucci and Gucci were all in the Omni. And this, in addition to Hermes, were all in the Omni in the 70s.
And this is, this conversation really could go in a million different ways, but just sticking with the fashion for a moment and what you see today, because this is this, like, you know, then and now conversation, right? I'm recently married. We're registering for gifts, call it a month and a half ago. And I'm walking into shopping malls and department stores, and I'm, like, depressed by what I'm not seeing. And I'm wondering, like, what the future of this retail is. And being commercial real estate, I'm seriously interested. Do you see it going back to specialized locations like hotels, or is programming a bigger part of it, like a Ponce City Market? Or, you know, is it sticking with things that are genuine, like the Curb Market on Auburn Avenue? What do you think?
Well, I think that it's all of the above. One of the things that I've observed over the years is that, again, things happen in fits and starts. There's a cyclical nature to development. And in Atlanta, it has gone in several directions. We went, for instance, in restaurants to be one of the few cities in America to have more than two then mobile five-star restaurants, with the dining room at Buckhead Ritz, Carlton, and Seeger's, to evolving into a city where the neighborhood restaurants emulate some of the current hipster hotspots in our own districts, like Edgewood, which is becoming very hipstoric with its rise. And
did you coin that phrase?
I'm certainly going to patent it.
I like it.
And parallel retail in the days before Lenox Square became what it is today, a regional mall. It was an open air mall with very few anchors. Phipps was owned by an independent local realtor and was basically a shop where a lot of the local folks had their one-off boutiques. And when Simon came to town, they bought in the big name brands that we see today, the Bloomingdale's, the Neiman Marcus's. But Atlanta also had a very thriving mixed use with Colony Square and the Omni, where national retailers, local folks had a decent, I think, retail environment. Where I think it's going in the future is, as you suggested, the Ponce City Markets, market types. Jamestown has done some very exciting things in the West Side Marketplace with some great national retailers that aren't in a lot of cities. And I think that trend will continue as our development patterns move to become more urban and more urbane.
Yeah, and I'm very interested in adaptive reuse, but I'm also interested in taking what we have and just taking it up a level, not even having to adapt the use. Like, if you take the Ponce City Market, okay, it was the old Sears and Roebuck building, then it was City Hall East, and now it's going to be, you know, the apartments and the office and the retail, all right? So it's a change of use. If you look at the municipal market, the Sweet Auburn Curb Market, that is a cultural asset, I think, of epic proportion that's been around since 1923. And can we just take it up a level and let people know about it? And I think you can. And I think that it comes with this, like, this grit and this patina that is hard to create new. And you mix in a streetcar coming, you know, down Auburn from the King Center, the Georgia Aquarium, back up Edgewood with a stop at the Curb Market. You mix in the Martin Luther King Historic District. You put Georgia State University, that's been there for 100 years, and even Grady, which for all of its kind of, you know, question marks, is still the fifth largest hospital in the U.S., and you've got something, like, special.
And it's going to grow. I think that one of the key factors in today, and then kind of taking today's growth and development and projecting that forward in the next 5 to 10 years, I think you see the beginnings, the infrastructure, if you will, of some very globally competitive type development, which will be inclusive of, obviously, restaurants, retail, and recreation. Why do I say that? Because the increasing diversity of the population, students, you have this high-tech influx that's coming in. You have people who have lived here, like myself, for years, who are going through different transitions in life and saying, I'd like to have a lifestyle that is more accustomed to not being in a car for 2 to 4 hours a day. All of those factors, I think, are going to create a confluence of interest that is very positive. As example, for all the hue and cry about this recent stadium project, I think people are missing the larger context of its catalytic value, that businesses and other interests are going to want to be in close proximity to that, and that's going to create spinoff development that's going to fill in some of the physical gaps in our central city.
Well, I see a stadium. I see people, prospectors, investors buying land around there, and even in places that you and I wouldn't get out of the car today. You know, you drive by your property kind of quickly and say, "Oh, I own that." I see an appreciation, and I actually agree with you on the catalytic opportunity, but just for the fun of playing devil's advocate, what do you say about things like Turner Field, where it's like, actually, there's a big article in Atlanta Magazine this month where it's like, what about the rest of the year? Like, it's dead. It's a ghost town.
Well, I think, again, looking forward, I think the opportunities are manifest. One of the things that I've seen in my tenure in Atlanta is that Atlanta's DNA is replete with opportunities where there have been shared visions created by strong leadership, public-private community partnerships. Have they all been successful? No. We look at T-Splos. We look at what happened in Buckhead when some of the major developments didn't go right. You can look at several attempts at underground. But when you look at the bigger picture, when you look at from the airport, the vision of a Maynard Jackson, the Olympics, the vision and reach of an Andrew Young, you begin to see that there is a context in which great things can happen. They won't happen just by themselves. But to be more specific with regard to Turner Field and its current status as primarily a venue for the Braves, I think the neighborhood surrounding that has some great bones. I've done some work in that area for some of the not-for-profits, and there's some great housing stock, great grid work. I think some TLC is on its way.
Yeah.
The city, through its development arm, Invest Atlanta, is taking some very strong looks in that area, has encouraged some developers to submit ideas. And as the population, again, becomes more diverse with diverse interests, not everyone is wants to live in a suburban environment. Not everyone wants to live in a Buckhead situation. I think the best way to characterize it, in Atlanta, it used to be either or. Now it's both and. You have many opportunities to have the type of experience that you crave rather than you have to having to sort of adapt yourself to a certain set of circumstances.
It's interesting to me. I have found by doing Sidewalk Radio, what I find are some of the key moments in Atlanta's history in regard to development. The train coming here that started it all, right? We're Terminus. We're a dot on a map. Then, you know, you've got the airport, which you mentioned, huge catalyst. You've got the Braves.
America's team.
America's team in many ways by way of TBS and Ted Turner, putting it into every household. We're known as a sports team. That certainly contributes to us getting an Olympics. Now the Beltline, I think a big deal. But it's kind of funny if you think about like the Olympics. It's like if you think about the venues of the Olympics, there some of them being beautiful, like the diving venue that's at Georgia Tech that very few people ever get to see, or the mountain biking or kayaking or whatever. Some of these things just had to be put here because we needed the spaces for an Olympics. But it's taken a long time for them to like grow up into that, where like even Centennial Park. I mean, it took a long time. The Olympics were 17 years ago. I would say that Centennial Park just within the last few years is really growing and coming into its own. Yes, you had Phillips Arena and CNN, but like now with, you know, the National Center for Civil and Human Rights on the way, the National College Football Hall of Fame, you've got the Georgia Aquarium. I mean, like, these things take a while. But I think, like, kind of following your track, if you talk about the new stadium for the Falcons, the Georgia Dome, is it still going to be called the Georgia Dome, by the way?
No. It's not going to be called the Georgia Dome. And as far as I am given to understand, there'll probably be some naming rights attached to the financing.
Okay, so the Georgia Dome is going to stay what it is, and whoever's going to use that, or is that coming down?
The Georgia Dome, upon 95% completion of the new facility, will be demolished, and a portion of that land will be green space.
Okay, so cool. So I'm learning some stuff. That's good. But I see this like new stadium, whatever it to be named stadium, as something that's really planned and strategic, instead of like, we're having an Olympics in a few years. Let's get some stuff up so that, like, you know, this thing can happen.
Well, certainly Atlanta has moved most expeditiously when there's been a strong motivation, like an Olympics, like a Super Bowl. And ironically enough, those two events and more, including the World Cup, can be catalyzed by the successful construction of this new facility. But it's going to be more competitive because Atlanta has moved from when I came here to being a city that was little known outside of the South and was seen as a peer of a Birmingham or other cities of similar size that grew during the 50s. Now it's in a different league, so to speak. And being globally competitive means that it's not just Baltimore that you're competing with, but you're competing with Birmingham, England for Olympics. And Atlanta's future, in my view, is to be the international gateway to the South, because the South, the 13-state region, is a very strong global economic powerhouse. And being situated midway between D.C. and Dallas and midpoint between Memphis and Miami, I think creates a great opportunity to invite people, programs, and progress to our door. But if we are not successful in terms of the competition and the new levels of competition that are going to be involved, then we will not be as successful as we can be. And I would suggest that certainly when you mentioned the Olympics, I can guarantee you that for 2024, which is being targeted by the United States, the USOC, and several cities such as some of our southern siblings like Dallas, Texas, we're going to have some strong competition because we've demonstrated that it can have a beneficial impact on the city and a long-term impact. 17 years is a minute. When I was going to New York in days of yore, Times Square was the armpit of the universe. And now New York and Times Square are a global capital. Washington, D.C., after the civil disturbances in the 60s, was a pariah. Baltimore was seen, and now both of those cities closely together have become more urbane and become very attractive for restaurants and retail.
Is it leadership?
Leadership is a very, very strong element, but leadership without followership is sometimes futile in nature. To be more specific, it's great to have a shared vision, something that people can talk about, can relate to. It's like when the Braves were winning. You could go sit down next to a banker or whomever and talk about anything, and there was a common ground, the enjoyment of this franchise. But that didn't mean that you loved the person you sat next to or wanted to move in with him. It meant that you had a common ground. And I think that Atlanta has the DNA to begin to create common grounds where different and sometimes diverging interests can come together and say, this is an outcome that is a win-win for all that is involved.
I mean, that's in our DNA, right?
It is, but it's like anything else. It can exist, but it has to be nurtured. It has to be developed, and it has to be closely monitored because conditions change.
Well, so how important was the civil rights movement to the development of Atlanta?
Well, let me backtrack by first saying extremely important. But my perspective in making that statement is I worked at the King Center for a number of years in a national economic development, community economic development program, and it gave me great insight as to why community economic development is the greatest form of nonviolent social change. That Dr. King's philosophy of bringing people together and creating that shared vision, as he stated, we're all bound in an inextricable web of circumstance. When you begin to recognize that and see the value add in that, you can achieve great things.
I think that the civil rights movement and the way that Atlanta was during that time, in that it wasn't the worst place in the South to be, mixed with the city too busy to hate in kind of this new era of freedom, which should have been there the whole time, has had a lot to do with the overall development and growth of Atlanta. And ironically, also a lot to do with the stalling and even deterioration of the birthplace of the civil rights in the Martin Luther King District. And now, many years later, you're seeing it come back. Are you proud to see that? Are you happy to see that? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's outstanding. And why do I say that? Because the dynamic that was created by Dr. King and others, it was in fact a movement, has an international dimension. While I was at the King Center, I met international leaders like the Emperor of Japan, who came to the King Center in recognition of the effects that Dr. King and Dr. King's philosophy had in their countries, in their homes, and in their lives. And when we look at the world today and the conflicts that just seem to be going on, not just in the Middle East, but throughout the world, global conflicts, regional conflicts, and the basic human desire to be free, to be able to pursue your own destiny. Atlanta stands as a testament, perfect, not even, but a solid testament that it can happen, that diverse communities can join together for the common good. And it's an organic movement. We're not complete. Dr. King is certainly deceased, but his movement goes on, and it as people begin to understand it, as I came to and continue to learn about it, it will grow and will take on dimensions to fill the opportunities that are created by this new global economy.
Well, and lest I forget to mention, one of the biggest catalysts of bubbly proportion, Coca-Cola.
Yes, the Coca-Cola company and its new leadership, which I'm observing from a distance, but very pleased at what I see. I think the CEO, Mr. Kent, has said that he wants Coca-Cola to be Atlanta's ambassador to the world. And I couldn't think of a better brand, as it were, to effect that type of relationship. And certainly their largesse in terms of philanthropy has been just absolutely key and critical to Atlanta's growth and development. And hopefully it will continue as we become more sophisticated in our desires in the city. You know, before people, there were a lot of people that wanted, you know, certain things to be a certain way. And there are now more people who want things to be a certain way. So as we embrace that type of change, hopefully Coca-Cola and many other of the corporations and organizations here who have historically been part and parcel of the growth of Atlanta will continue that. One key area is obviously going to be the arts, because Atlanta is very competitive with, I would say, most American cities in a lot of respects. Where we're not at some cities' levels, we're fast approaching, based on our resources, some very great levels of experience. But I believe that we probably have a lot further to go in the arts. We have some great facilities, but how we expand those, embrace more people, get more people involved, and see the full spectrum of what the arts offers economically and culturally, I think can be exciting. But in the final analysis, what it all boils down to is Atlanta just needs to be the best Atlanta it can be.
And I think that very well said. And I think that people have a real, Atlantans and others in the world have a really pretty good idea of how important Coca-Cola has been. Even as like kind of the silent ambassador before, you know, Woodruff Name was on the Art Center, in their philanthropy, in bringing big business here and getting Atlanta's name out there. And part of that philanthropy is in the form of education, which we haven't talked about yet, and I think pretty critical to Atlanta. The black colleges, and by their nature of being here, in many ways help with the civil rights movement starting here. Education, now Georgia Tech, great example, in helping foster that new wave of tech excitement in the way of entrepreneurship. Emory, Georgia State, all of them. I mean, we have a serious hotbed of education in Atlanta.
I think it's often unrecognized, but it has been and it will represent a tremendous asset going forward, not only to bring students here, but as you mentioned a minute ago, the entrepreneurial zeal that characterized the growth of places like Silicon Valley in California, Route 128 in Massachusetts, and now in Austin, Texas. Those types of development patterns can and will occur here. But I think what will make Atlanta unique is that because we have so many diverse institutions, we don't have a Stanford or Harvard. So our institutions collaborate well. The AU Center, Morehouse Medical School, Emory Medical School, as you suggested, Grady, which is a tremendous resource going forward, will become more of an organizational matrix. And I think in that instance, not only will education become a cornerstone of the development, I think it will be a key driver.
How come you're not a history teacher?
That's one of my favorite subjects in back in the days when I was a college student. But I have taught economic development at Georgia Tech over in the AU Center. And it's one of the references that I use because I call it the Santayana admonition, those who fail to read history. And so I always give a historical backdrop before I give the theoretical framework of what I practice in terms of community economic development. And Dr. King's philosophy, which is what makes me an urban guru, if you will, is just inextricably tied to that, that the history. He built his philosophy not on just what he experienced, but the history going back to the nonviolent movement of Gandhi in India and studying the great theologians of Europe. And of course, the Black church experience, the people who preceded him. And he melded all of that together. And so history is very important when you begin to look at progress.
I mean, I would take your class.
We will be having that discussion soon.
I'm taking a class right now.
Well, I am going to be doing some things in the future, which I'm not at liberty to discuss at this point. But certainly, I think the timing here in Atlanta is good because before we take off again, we need to understand where we came from.
Do you ever get overwhelmed though, like with the amount of information that's out there, or like how you know a lot and you have a lot of interest, but it's like if someone who's listening to the show wants to go and learn about any topic, I mean, the access to information, the abundance of information can really be overwhelming.
Well, you have to have a thirst for knowledge. But my secret is, and of course, don't tell anyone, is I have a set of relationships with people like yourself who I can call on and ask questions because that's how you create knowledge. You know, that's one of the things that you tie into this whole notion of innovation and urban regeneration. It's contact. Knowledge is created by people interacting with each other, and usually personally, not necessarily limiting themselves to an electronic device. And so my
success— Yeah, the old-fashioned social network.
Well, yes, and it can be over a meal, chat and chew, as I term it, or it can be in a social context with an Atlanta has a great deal of social organizations, Hands-On Atlanta.
Got to do a shout out for Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Exactly. All of those give people an opportunity to be creative, to be innovative, and to share their time and talents with others.
I think people want to be a part of the community now.
And that's where my notion of shared vision comes in. When people feel that they're valued, when people feel that they're recognized and they're part of something greater than themselves, not that they have to, again, be lockstepped and philosophically enjoined, but clearly where there is something that people can wrap their collective minds, hearts, and spirits around, progress can be made, knowledge can be gleaned, and certainly people can be enriched.
Well, I think they have been today. I certainly have, and I thank you for joining us.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I look forward to talking with you again.
To be continued. Thank you, sir.